Hey everyone, Baseball America, Facebook Live and Podcast here, J.J. Cooper, Hudson Blinsky, and Carlos Collazo, as we're going to wrap up a very crazy, a very busy, a very fun first day of the draft. Before we do that, though, we do want to thank you for tuning in, and we want to thank our sponsor, Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. Looking for that perfect Father's Day gift or the graduate gift for some graduate in your life? Go to baseballism.com, enter the code BA2017, and you will get free shipping on your order. Baseballism gear, as we always are sporting. Got the hats here, too. But so, we're jumping in. We're just going to do this rapid fire. Less questions tonight. Sorry, guys. But we'll hopefully answer your questions because we're going to cover all the teams. We'll knock out the first one first. Cardinals, great tonight. Draft. So far, nothing. They lost all their picks in the penalties for the Chris Correa hacking scandal, and so we will talk about them more on a future podcast. So one team down, yes. 29 to go. We're going to go alphabetical from here. Arizona Diamondbacks, whose first pick was at pick 7. The Diamondbacks take Paven Smith, first baseman, Drew Ellis, third baseman, slash first baseman, and Dalton Varsho, catcher, slash OF. Catcher now, but I think the theme, Hudson, that we could say for this draft was college bats.
Oh, yeah, no question. It aligns with some of the thinking that you typically have seen from that Boston regime that has gone to Arizona. I mean, Boston's been not necessarily analytically inclined, but generally leaning that way, a team that's very thorough in their information. And now you think about it, Mike Hayes and Amiel Sade in charge of the operation generally in Arizona. Mm-hmm. So they're probably, I'm guessing those were the guys who signed off on the picks. And Paven Smith, deep track record of performance.
You know, does not strike out.
Does not strike out.
And we mean does not.
He hit more home runs than he had strikeouts.
He's the hardest in the NCAA to strike out this year. I know he was very close to the top of the list. But
I believe, and that's also considering he's playing in the ACC. He's not playing in the JV league. So I like that pick. And then Drew Ellis also, Justin Perline did some analysis, our intern for the summer, did some analysis on the class, and Drew Ellis did really well in that analysis in terms of weighted on base average, weighted runs above average, you know, some of these more careful analytical measures that are not going to necessarily weigh each outcome the same. So so some good stuff there on Ellis as well. And then Dalton Varsho is a really good value pick, I think, at 68. I think he starts to make sense there. We had heard him a little bit earlier than that.
We heard him
possibly in the first round, which
seemed high.
And so I think when you're talking about where you get college catchers, I mean, he ends up being the first college catcher off the board in a light college catcher class, and I think there are some good day two picks in the college catching class. But
value is in the
day two.
Yes.
So here you get the first college catcher. You get a guy who's really hit this year. You have some questions on whether he's going to be able to catch, but seems like a pretty good athlete. Good pick, I think. You know, from where they got him. So three college bats. Those are all safe bets. I think you can count on those guys to have some immediate prospect value. Whether they're all big leaguers is another question, but they're all going to carry some value as performers.
So we go on the Braves. We're just rolling right through this. The Braves picked 5th, and then we get at 41. The Braves were a team that we kind of thought could be kind of a fulcrum-type team, a team that created kind of what happened after them. And then when it's all said and done, Kyle Wright's on the board at 5, and Carlos, Kyle Wright's who they take.
Yeah, it seems like they've been interested in Kyle Wright for a while. We've heard them tied to Kyle Wright for a long time in this cycle. And I think you could make an argument that Kyle Wright's the best player in this draft purely on talent. I know we've talked about signability before, but Kyle Wright, he's got that mix of upside and floor that you really want to see. And then Drew Waters is our best prospect out of the state of Georgia, an interesting power speed guy.
So the Braves love to take guys out of Georgia. It's a general trend of theirs going back many a year. Go back when Rob English was the area scout, George Lombard and all that, back when I was a lot younger.
Yeah.
I
like their draft a lot. I think, you know.
With Drew Waters, you get another guy who's a first-round talent based on where we had him in our rankings.
Yeah, I had heard interest in him as high as mid-teens. So the you get two really good players, and you get the guy who might end up being a big leaguer pretty quickly, and is very in Kyle Wright, you get a guy who might be a part of the foundation for your World Series club, your run in a couple years. So I think it's a great pick.
The thing that also stands out to me about this is I felt like the draft worked out the way the Braves had hoped it would.
Yeah.
Because if Brendan McKay, who goes four, had gotten ten, let's say Kyle Wright goes four, which wasn't, I don't think, going to happen, but let's say it did, and they're sitting there, Brendan McKay is the fifth pick. I think that was the guy that they didn't, you know, like,
yeah,
that they were less on as far as, because he didn't match the same Braves upside. You know, he's more of a, he's a very good player, but I felt like of the top five.
With McKay, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my information was different based on how what I heard from people within that organization. I thought they were pretty high on McKay. I just don't think they really ever envisioned him being there ultimately, and so I don't think they really fared down for that reason.
Okay, that moves us on to the third team. Well, the fourth team we're doing. Cardinals already knocked out. The Orioles. The Orioles picked at 2160, and then a supplemental competitive balance pick, I should say, at 74. D.L. Hall, Adam Hall, so they go Hall and Hall, and then Zach Lowther, Lowther.
Lowther is what I've heard. Yeah. I've also heard Lowther. I can't confirm that.
So two lefties and a Canadian shortstop. D.L. Hall at 21. If you go by our board, that was a very solid pick.
Mm.
High upside lefty.
And there you talked about Hudson, just the upside this guy has. I mean, you mentioned the East Coast Pro showing that you saw him have.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the best performance of anyone, I think the whole summer. And I say anyone. If that was all, if you got to only see the best performance of every one prospect, I think this guy would have been, you know, the number one pick. I mean, it was that kind of good. It was, you had a lefty sitting in the mid-90s with looseness, athleticism. He was commanding that day. And, oh, by the way, he had a hammer-breaking ball. And when that pitch is on, it's completely unhittable. It's this, like, sharp 1-7, 12-6, just power bite, late snap. The problem is it's not always on. Command isn't always there.
Yeah,
you're going to have to develop that. It's not going to be... He's not going to the big leagues tomorrow. This is what the minor leagues are for, and I think it's a really good pick at 21.
Athletic basketball player when he was at Houston County High in his junior year, you know, can dunk. I mean,
yeah, I'll have to look up one of the videos of D.L. Duncan. There was, at the Tournament of Stars last year, I guess he was playing around with some friends and went up, and I believe he jumped over someone. A person like,
and
yeah,
DL, and let's make clear, DL's not the 6'7", like, you know.
No, DL's like 6 foot, 6'1",
yeah.
So he's very athletic, fun, humble kid, you know.
Hall, the other picks they took, Adam Hall, second Canadian off the board, shortstop who, you know, everyone's seen for a pretty long while, but at the same time, I think it's 60. Is that a little higher than you expected, or?
You know what, and you were going to get to some other guys who fit a similar kind of description. In the summertime, I would have said if he was available at 59, no shot.
Mm-hmm.
No shot this guy would have been available at 59. I believe he was in the 20s or late teens of our high school top 100 in the fall. Don't quote me on that exactly. But you, in the summertime, you were looking at a guy who was a maybe shortstop, probably plays the outfield, second base, but he showed you flashes at shortstop. But the thing you were really enthused about was the bat. This guy had showed you bat speed. He had made plenty of hard contact on the showcase circuit against good pitching. He's been famous for a long time. This spring, not the same, not quite the same offensively as he was. Struggled a little bit early. The thing you got to remember about those trips for the Canadians, when they first go south, they've not played outside yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're Canadian, and it's April. It's March, April, so... Spring training, when they go on those trips, the Canadian junior national team plays against minor league teams. They play against the actual Blue Jays. But that's really spring training for them. So I think sometimes we can over-evaluate a little bit for some guys who are just getting outside for the first time. So I do think it's a justifiable pick where they got him.
Red Sox, two guys they take tonight. 24, they take right-hander Tanner Houck from Missouri. Right-hander with a long track record at Missouri. And then at 63, they take athletic high school outfielder, happens to be from my hometown, Cole Brannon, at 63. So, Hudson, let's start with Houck. Again, at that spot, about the spot we kind of expected, but you are getting a pretty lengthy track record there.
Tons of it. I mean, that's the name of the game. I mean, there were teams that tried to sign Tanner Houck out of high school. He had matched up with Alex Lang in high school. I believe they pitched against each other.
And then kept doing it in college.
Yeah, and
they kept doing it in college.
And they both go in the top 30 tonight. Mm-hmm. But with Houck, and we talked about him, I think, on the earlier Facebook Live. I don't know if we've talked about a million conversations.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, with Houck, you're getting a really deceptive physical guy. And if he's a starter, fantastic. If not, he's an impactful reliever. And you need impactful relievers. There's a place for that, especially in Boston. You know, like you have a guy who throws from kind of a lower slot, mm-hmm. sinks the fastball a ton, throws low to mid 90s, velocity not quite where it was last year. This year, I could have said that easier way, but I think it's a good pick. The thing is, you're with him. Yeah, I'm gonna need a little more coffee. The slider his slider was inconsistent. This year, not particularly good early. You're going to have varying opinions on that slider, but big-time deception, fastball life.
Yeah. And Nicole Brandon, you're getting an athletic outfielder who's got some speed, but he has a little bit of pop there, too.
Yeah, he does a little bit of everything. I think Cole Brandon's a fine player, a fine pick there. You're kind of banking on him growing into some more power, becoming a little more physical as he becomes a man, but a guy who's going to probably play center field. Tons of value there. Good high school bats taking that round.
Now the Cubs, much like they did last year, pitching. Yeah. Used to be that we always just said the Cubs it was just going to be all position players that are going to take a college bat with the first pick. Well, this time we get Brendan Little, lefty, from JUCO lefty at 27. Alex Lang, we just talked about it even a little bit, the LSU righty at, again, long track record at 30. And then Corey Abbott, right-hander from Loyola Marymount. So three college pitchers. Different college pitchers. But.
Yeah, what's interesting to me about all three of those guys is that neither of them is a bona fide, no doubt starter. But they all have that kind of ceiling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, is the thing. So you kind of throw three darts. You put the blindfold on and throw three darts in a line, and maybe you get a bullseye. Maybe you do get a starter out of this group. I think Brendan Little's, no doubt, the highest ceiling of this group. You're talking about a lefty with. The ability to reach the mid-90s with a hammer breaking mm-hmm. ball. The day I saw him this spring was his worst start of the year. He had a blister. He struggled with that. He's the pitching coach there at State College of Florida. His name's escaping me right now, but he's a former big leaguer, worked a lot with Brendan.
Yeah, we have a really good story on baseballamerica.com kind of talking about how Brendan Little has kind of overcome some of those control issues that he had last year and even early.
Yeah, I mean, his freshman year, high school senior year, I mean, he was in the BA 500 in 2015, mm-hmm. I believe early 100s, right around 120, if I recall. And at that point, I mean, he walked, I think, close to five or six batters per nine in high school in Conestoga, Pennsylvania. So not like he was doing that even in a hotbed, mm-hmm. So not the place you want to be walking a lot of guys. And then goes to North Carolina and doesn't have the command to pitch right away for the Tar Heels, so doesn't pitch a lot and transfers. Here he is, first-round pick.
It works out pretty well. And I do like, the Cubs, the Cubs have earned a lot of kind of, hey, they seem to know what they're doing. But the thing that's very interesting about this is that they have very clearly targeted, okay, we feel this makes sense. They have the bats. Their bats, they don't really have openings. They're trying to figure out a way to shoehorn Ian Happ into an opening. But they don't really have openings in their lineup for quite a while, probably. Mm-hmm. They have plenty of openings for pitching, and so they're loading up.
You know what's interesting about all three of these guys, too, is they all have potential for plus breaking balls. Mm-hmm. And Little and Lang are talking about curveballs, more top-to-bottom pitches.
Two of the best curveballs in this draft.
Absolutely. And then Abbott, I haven't seen Abbott live, but my understanding is that he's got more of a slider, and he's probably, there was a few guys today that went in the second round that we were a little bit lower on mm-hmm. in the rankings.
I think we had Abbott at 184.
Yeah, we didn't have
149.
We didn't jack him up. Mm-hmm. The interest that we heard, it's a really small sample of him succeeding, mm-hmm. right? And I guess he learned his slider watching a video from Noah Syndergaard on YouTube. Yeah. And he, if you look at his stats, there's a very clear delineation of when he had learned that slider mm-hmm. and when he had not. So it's like a hard. Mid to upper 80s slider that's in the guy's 90-93 off the mound or with the fastball. So, it's kind of that true power mm-hmm. hard slider. And you look at his performance, his strikeout rate was exceptional. He kept rising, and that's what happens. Sometimes these guys will rise. People keep telling us, yeah, move this guy up, move this guy up. And we do it, and we don't quite do it enough. So that happens to us sometimes.
He's also a guy who moved to the third base side of the rubber, and I guess found some success. I know you're a big fan of
that,
JJ.
That.
So
there you go. Let that slider break in on the ready, son.
If the Cubs were going all about the pitching, the White Sox had two picks tonight, and they were all about the college power bats, which follows up taking Zach Collins, who was a college power bat from last year's class, first-round pick. So at 11, they take Jake Berger, third baseman from Missouri State. At 49, Gavin Sheets, first baseman from Wake Forest. And, again, you're talking about a very clear, so far, two picks, but a very clear trend of those two picks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they obviously value the power for both of those guys. You get one who's a maybe first baseman, maybe third baseman in Jake Berger, and then you get one who's definite first baseman. And with Berger, you have the differences in righty-lefty for both of these guys. You're getting extreme power from both of them. These are probably two of the best power bats in the college class. You know, I think you could probably include Brent Rooker in that discussion. Brent Rooker goes ahead of the White Sox in the second round. But yeah, Gavin Sheets, the dude raked this year.
Yep.
Son of a big leaguer. And then Jake Berger has done it for 3 years at Missouri State. He's long been thought of as a first-round talent. He was interesting. We didn't, we also ultimately didn't rank him as high as he went, but I don't think that's a reach at all at 11. I think he's totally justifiable there.
I think we were all at like, we had like 15.
We had him 15, 20, something like that.
Some not far, not that far.
Totally justifiable.
We'd cheat 65 and Berger 20.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Reds. Reds have the second pick in the draft. Hunter Green. Come back with a competitive balance pick, Jeter Downs, shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
And then second round, they take Stuart Fairchild, outfielder sent out of Wake Forest.
Goodness, what a good draft.
You can't, I mean, picking two helps.
Yeah, I mean, maybe win some games in the big leagues and then you don't
But picking two helps.
Pick two.
That said, there is a lot to like about that, you know, that draft. Okay, first thing, I'll put you two guys on the spot. So, the best short, Jeter Downs is good. He's not the best shortstop that they drafted. You know,
we were actually debating who the best shortstop of this class should
be.
If you go
look at our our rankings for the shortstops, because Hunter Green is largely ranked where he is at.
He's the right hand.
He's the number one prospect in the class for us because of his upside of the mound. That said, I started to break it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We've ranked him, if he were just a shortstop, and go look at our list on baseballamerica.com, position by position.
Yeah,
we have
all the position rankings.
Hunter Green is number one on shortstops.
Yep.
And it's...
How hard was it for you to put him over Royce Lewis? Because Lewis is a guy, again, who could...
If we're pretending that Hunter Green's not going to pitch, which he's going to pitch. The guy's going to pitch. It's happening. If we're pretending he's not going to pitch... Then it becomes very interesting because with Hunter Green, you have to develop a little more feel to hit it. You have massive, massive tools in the body control, the range, the arm that he has at shortstop. Exceptional raw power.
Mm-hmm.
Pure feel to hit is not quite at the same level as a Jeter Downs, as a Royce Lewis. And those guys are a little more well-rounded for that reason as position players. But maybe Hunter Green would be a better hitter if he didn't focus on trying to throw a fastball 101 miles an hour and with command. So,
again,
unanswerable question.
The fascinating thing to me is going to be, okay, Hunter Green is going to be one of those difficult players. You figure that they're going to start very slow with him because that's generally what teams do, like as far as what level they'll send him to. But, for one, don't have that many innings on the arm this year.
That's all intentional, too.
Yeah, so it's like, you're going to get a guy. You don't have to just shut down and say, we'll see you next year.
And to explain that a little further, Green shut down after roughly, I think it's 28 innings he pitched. I think it was four or five starts that he made this spring. And then he was shut down as a pitcher with the thinking being rest before the draft and then get ready to roll quickly after the draft. So he's not going to have a long layoff. I assume this deal is going to get done relatively quickly. Nothing set in stone, no dry ink yet.
Right.
But I assume
it's going to be done by July 15th. It's going to get
certainly.
Done. So.
And so you look at him, you look at it this way from a player development perspective, you can go get him some innings in affiliated ball right now, keep him going through instructs and be comfortable with that because his innings were limited this spring.
We had him at 28 innings with 43 strikeouts and 4 walks this season.
So
is that good?
It's pretty solid.
So the thing about this is he probably goes. He goes to the AZL. You would assume to start. You know, to start his pro career.
I am very bummed that he's not going to be in the Appy League in our backyard this year.
But the thing about him that's going to be interesting is next year he is a guy. I know he's got to work on developing the breaking ball and all that. But the reality is he is a guy who very well. Much more so to me than if you took the guys like the Riley Pint from last year's class, who was, you know, the top high school right-hander on the class, all that, Ian Anderson, those guys. I think he may get to low A next year. He is the guy who could be like, you know what, low A is just not enough of a challenge for him.
Yeah, I don't see low A being a problem for him because his fastball velocity, command, life, all
right,
that.
Right, that's what I'm saying. He may have to move to high A pretty quickly just to really have somewhere where that it gets the development of, okay, you need to, sometimes you need to be able to be punished for not breaking off that breaking ball, things like that.
Yeah, I think you could see sort of a Rick Porcello-esque kind of jump through the minor leagues because he's relatively polished. He doesn't have everything he's going to need to compete at the major league level right now, but it's hard to imagine a whole lot of minor league guys being able to hit this guy. So maybe that development's going to come at the big league level. He's probably going to get there really quickly. He might be there 20, 21 years old. So you're looking at a really, really exciting prospect there. And, oh, by the way, Stuart Fairchild, that guy's really good. That guy's going to play center field, and he's showing power this year. I mean, he's playing at Wake Forest, hitter's paradise. But still, he's hitting the ball out of the yard, and he's going to play center field. That's an impactful player. That sounds like an average regular or better. And then that's your third pick. You also got Hunter Green and Jeter Downs. Jeter Downs had proven himself to be one of the better hitters in the high school class for a lot of evaluators this spring. So hard to find anything not to like about that draft.
No, that's a pretty easy one to like.
Yeah.
Indians. The Indians don't have a first-round pick this year. They do take two guys, though, still today. Because they did have the competitive balance B round pick, supplemental second rounds, we like to call it. So they take Quentin Holmes, speedy outfielder from high school outfielder from New York, 64th pick, and then they turn around and take shortstop Tyler Freeman out of California, Rancho Cucamonga, high school shortstop.
Itawanda.
Yeah.
Itawanda.
Itawanda in Rancho Cucamonga.
Yeah. Itawanda in Rancho. But
that's a handful right there.
But Quentin Holmes.
Holmes is a guy you've been all over, Hudson.
Well, me some Fortnite Holmes.
Yeah.
I'm a big, big fan of this kid. And, you know, I've talked to him a lot over the past year. I've gotten to know him a little bit and understand the way he thinks about the game, the way he approaches the game. And those are really, really exciting attributes that he has in terms of his makeup. He's the leader of every team he's ever been on.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the hardest workers on every team that he's ever been on. Was the personality for the 18U national team, the personality for the area code Yankees, the East Coast Pro Rangers, all of this stuff. By the way, he's a plus runner. He filled out. He got a lot stronger. He showed a little more pop this spring. He has that surprising pull power where it kind of, you know, he'll hit a line drive. You're going to think, all right, well, that's going to die soon. And then it just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
It's that extra thump in there and the quick hands, wide hips, runs like a deer, all the cliches you want to throw at this guy, he's got him. Not the best spring for him, and that's why he ends up at 64 and not 24 or 14, which you might have thought he might have been in play for early on or entering the year. But an exciting value pick, I think, at 64.
Yep. And then Tyler Freeman, 71.
Yeah.
He hit over 500 in the regular season. So
yeah.
He's controlled the bat pretty well.
Yeah,
Tyler. Did he get shortstop for you?
Maybe he's very similar to Jeter Downs, we just talked about, and he proved himself offensively as a hitter, and he's always hit. He's another very high makeup person. You know, I don't know him personally as well as I know Quentin Holmes, but you know, their makeup reports on Tyler Freeman are awesome, and he's actually written some blogs that are
really
about leadership and about his approach to the game that are really. You ought to dig on all these guys, but go on the internet. I'll try to retweet. I'll try to find Tyler Freeman's blog posts, but they're pretty cool.
He has blog posts that he doesn't need to protect before the draft. I mean, there are other players who they need to basically scrub before the draft.
Yeah, but him, you're getting a hitter, and we kept moving him up too. not sure if we moved him up. I mean, I don't think on consensus we probably had him in the right spot, but the conversations I had were with him were very much, like, I had specific conversations with evaluators relating him to Jeter Downs. Mm-hmm. And Jeter Downs goes about 40 picks higher. This guy seems like a similar player, to be honest with you.
So then we go on to the Rockies. Again, the Rockies didn't have a first-round pick. I believe that was the Ian Desmond signing. But they do have two picks tonight still. 48 and 70, Ryan Vallee, third baseman from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Well, Texas and then Oklahoma. And then Tommy Doyle, right-hander from Virginia, who looked really good late. I mean, guys can make some money, you know, in the regionals. And
yeah, he had a very good finish. And you know what's interesting? He's another one probably that ultimately didn't rank high enough. He's been a reliever this year for Virginia. He's going to possibly have a chance to start at the next level. I got some comparisons from him to Corbin Martin, saying what's so different about this guy?
We'll be talking about
Corbin Martin. Yeah. Corbin Martin, Texas A&M guy who went to the Astros 56.
Yeah.
So with Doyle, you're getting a big physical right-hander, good arm action delivery, big fastball. Not always, velocity was not always there. Consistently low 90s, sometimes mid-90s, and then at the end, he spiked and hit 98 in the regional. He's got a really good cutter slider thing that he works with, and he throws a lot at UVA. Probably wanted to pitch off the fastball a little bit more at the pro level, but a potential starter there, which is a good value, I think. And then Vallade was a hard one for me this year, because if you had a Mount Rushmore of bad area code games performances, he'd be right up there. Mm-hmm. It was not indicative of who he actually is, you know. Tired middle of the end of the summer, dog days of August, really struggle at the area code games. Bounced back, had a really good fall, had a really good spring, did it in front of the right people. You're getting a guy who's probably not going to stick at shortstop, but has the tools to play second or third and has profile power for either one of those positions. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, extremely good makeup on this guy.
Coach's kid who's been around the game, been around big leaguers, basically, you know, Elvis Andrus worked with him. He's got the background is really good there. So that moves us on to the Tigers. And if I just closed my eyes, didn't know anything about this draft, and I said, okay, wait, let me guess. Okay, so the Tigers are picking 18. Is there going to be an SEC pitcher available? Yes, there is. Alex Fado, 18 to the Tigers. And then Ronaldo Rivera, 57, in the Chipotle outfielder / first baseman.
Yeah,
that is a tie.
Well, if we had a conversation on January 1st, right, and said, you know, who do you think are some options for the Tigers at 18?
Alex Fado would have never worked into the conversation.
No way he's in that discussion 6 months ago. I mean, he was in closer to the 1-1 discussion for the Twins, and you know, he scuffles a little bit early. He's had. Both of his knees have been scoped, both for minor things, and he pitched he made every start this year. You know, velocity wasn't great early on. Velocity was really good this past weekend in the Super Regional against Wake Forest. This guy's got a monster slider. It's a late snapper, and it comes in and it bites late, and I think his changeup's really good, too.
It's up there rivaling Bukowski's slider in the class, right?
Yeah, I would say that those are the two big ones in the class. And with Fado, the other thing to mention on him, second Alonso High School alum, I'm going to have to call this guy back, but I will get back to him very quickly. the second Alonso High School alumni to go in the top 20 picks, previous one, Jose Fernandez. Good company.
I'm trying to just move us along a little quicker. So
I'm sorry.
No,
guys.
No, it's good.
Ronaldo Rivera can hit.
Yes, Ronaldo Rivera can hit. He had a monster NJ National Junior College World Series. Monster.
Yeah.
But that brings us up. You mentioned Bukowskis.
Yep.
To me, if I said the guy who fell because just how the draft worked out, mm-hmm. who, if you said about Fado and about how if you're the Tigers and Fado at 18, if you're the Astros and we were talking in mid-late March and you said, how about J.B. Bukowskis at 15?
No way.
It would have been like, no, there's just no, he's not going to be there. J.B. Zekauskas, Joe Perez, the third baseman, which we'll get into.
Yeah.
Corbin Martin, right-hander, and then J.J. Mattingly, because they get the picks from the Cardinals. So that's why they picked four times tonight.
Yeah.
Bukauskas to the Astros seems like a good fit just because, I mean, we talked about how Bukauskas pitches off this slider a lot in college. Well, the Astros this year throw the fewest amount of fastballs as a team at the major league level. I think only the Yankees throw fewer fastballs. So it'll be interesting to see how his usage changes when he gets into that organization because they don't seem like he's that afraid to throw a lot of breaking balls.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the talking to JB about this throughout this season, and he's in our backyard at North Carolina, so it was, we got to see him a lot. But with him, rather than just pitching off his fastball, he wants to work on fastball deception.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to imagine that 96 doesn't always play at the collegiate level, but it does. And sometimes what JB says is that he's got a tendency to rush his front side with his front hip opening up, and then he's here. When he's here, his fastball's right here, and you can see it all the way through, right? So that fastball, look, it's 96, but if you can see it back here rather than right out here,
mm-hmm.
it's a very different look for a hitter.
For sure.
So he's got the monster slider, going to need to work
the
on
the
anti-Zach
fastball. Lowther. Zach Lowther.
The opposite of Zach Lowther.
Yeah, Lowther, well, lefty-righty, but Lowther, you don't see it until basically it dies.
Lowther, big, 6'5"-ish, you know, huge dude. Bukauskas, 6 foot, 6'1". But not small.
Yeah.
Broad-shouldered, physical, athletic.
And then Perez.
Checks a lot of boxes.
Perez, third base, pick 53.
Me and Hudson were talking about this all spring. I mean, Perez performed better as an offensive player than anyone on his team with Archbishop McCarthy, and they're one of the best teams in the country for high school hitters. And he's obviously got the fastball that gets up there in the mid-upper 90s. He can really put up the velo there. But he hit like 8 home runs this season, was the best hitter on his team. And he had Tommy John surgery recently, and we thought that might cause him to slide down a little bit. But he's taken probably higher than we expected him to, I would say. Miami commit, you might think he goes to school and hits at the DH his freshman year, but that Tommy John surgery.
Honestly, that's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
I thought he, because you know, what I had heard is that he'd be ready in time for the spring to DH at Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And what that tells you is probably going to be ready to DH for the Astros next year. I mean, with a guy like that, you usually don't see those kinds of guys rushed to
mm-hmm.
full season ball. You usually see them go to extended spring training and then to go to short season league in their first full professional year. But, you know, it's kind of an odd situation.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't necessarily see him going that high.
Defensively, where do you see him profile? Like, he's a third baseman. That's what he's drafted as. I mean, he's got the arm for sure to play there. Do you think he can stick at the hot corner? Is he quick enough?
That's
always a big question with us.
That's going to be the question. And the thing is, we've said that a lot about guys over the years, right? Like, Miguel Sano. Is Miguel Sano going to be quick enough to play third base? Is Chris Bryant going to be quick enough to play third base? You know, I think that ultimately teams make that work as long as you hit. You know, if you hit and you hit for power, and I think Joe Perez has that kind of profile power. He's got all fields power. He can crank it opposite field. He can turn on it and pull it. It's massive power and bat speed. And he's also very young, which is the point to mention. I think he's 17, 8 months. So he's definitely 17. Not sure exactly how young he is, but young guy, you know, take a shot on him.
Royals picked 3 times today. 14th pick in the draft. They take Nick Prado, first baseman of Huntington Beach. Again, we talk track record. Track record for a high school guy, it's going to be hard to have much more track record than Nick Prado has. MJ Melendez, talk about the coach's kid, catcher from Westminster Christian in Palmetto Bay, Florida. And then Evan Steele, lefty, the second Chipotle guy taking.
Those are going to be coming.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot more of those coming from the JUCO national champs.
Yeah, we should probably get Chipotle for day 3.
Yeah,
I'd be a huge fan of that. I'm always a fan of Chipotle.
Yeah, well, we should get like maybe 10 Chipotle burritos because they're probably one for each Chipotle guy who's going to be taken on day 3. There's going to be a lot of Chipotlans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a word.
But
just made it happen.
But Nick Prado, 14th overall. That, again, you say, okay, this is not going to be just the step in and here's your Eric Hosmer replacement because Nick Prado is not going to be ready in time. I mean, Eric Hosmer's contract is up real soon. But you can't help but think about the fact that this is a team that's had Eric Hosmer as their first baseman now for really more than half a decade. And then they go out and they draft another polished guy who could also pitch. Eric Hosmer could do that too. So
Yeah, that's interesting. With Prado, you get in the bat, it's really that simple. The pitching for him is really, he's really good. He'd be a really good two-way player if he went to college. Mm-hmm. Guy's going to hit.
Best prep hitter in our class.
Probably. I wouldn't go, personally, just based on what I saw only, mm-hmm. I wouldn't go that far, but I'm sure that the Royals probably feel that way if they ended up with the guy. The thing with him, the development of his power in the fall, I had guys say, hey, we always knew it was in there, but he started to show more raw power in the fall. He has a tendency to get a little pull happy. I think we talked about him earlier. He stands really close to the plate. He has a chance to yank the ball. I think that this spring he tried to hit for more power. He tried to prove that it was in there. And so his results weren't quite what you would hope for. He didn't bat 600 like you'd hope a high school first baseman would if you take him in the first round. I think he was closer to a 350 or something. But the power he showed was there. We'll see. I mean, the track record of high school first basemen that go in the first round is actually pretty solid.
Actually, I would argue it's probably better than the college first baseman going in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, because you have to prove yourself to go that high. Teams have to be really convicted.
Speaking of Eric Hosmer, I think third overall in the...
And it's not like the Royals went off the board to take Nick Prado. We had him a little lower in our rankings. I think we had him 24, 25, something like that. But
again,
he would have gone.
Those ranges, that's a range.
He would have gone in the next 10 picks. He would have gone.
Yeah. That takes us...
Not a reach.
That takes us to the Angels, and I think it's fair to say we love the Angels draft. Now, part of that starts with the fact that the Angels need some help. I mean, the farm system is very bereft, barren. You pick your adjective. But Jordan Adele, 10th pick overall, uber upside. And then Griffin Canning, right-hander at 47, who, again, you talk about what he did this year, what he's shown, that looks like a really good pick at 47.
Yeah,
I got a chance to talk to Jordan Adele this year. Super polished kid. I mean, he's one of these toolsy outfielders. We have a ton of these guys in this class. He's really taken strides with his bat-to-ball skills this season. He has like 24 home runs. It's not the greatest competition, but he's got great power, great arm in the outfield, extremely athletic. So he's raw right now. I think you could say that pretty safely, but I mean, he has some of the highest upside in the class.
Yeah, and if those tools translate, this guy might be the best player in the whole class. It's that simple.
He has that possibility.
No, that's a big if. You don't know how. I mean, in the summer, he had a lot of swing and miss, even at pitches in the strike zone. There were issues there in the summer. He did everything he could ask.
He got a lot better.
There's still some people who doubt whether those adjustments are going to hold up because he's facing guys throwing 76 mile an hour. Fastballs. It's not great competition. If that, he's a risk, but he could end up being really good. The Canning pick, I like the Canning pick. I mean, there's a medical situation there, apparently. His MRI is not the prettiest, but what is pretty is the stuff that comes out of his hand. It's a lively low to mid-90s fastball. He spins both a slider and a curveball pretty well. He shows you a pretty good changeup. On the right night, if you go in at a given time, you might see either one of his pitches be a plus pitch and him throwing tons of strikes and getting swings and misses at the highest level of collegiate baseball. So, good pick there.
Yeah.
Hard not to like that one.
Okay, keeping it in L.A., we go to the Dodgers. Again, you talk about a guy where he went. Jerrin Kendall... I'll say personally, I'm worried about the swing and miss and all. And if Jerrin Kendall had gone in the top 10, I would have said, ooh, I'm really worried about swing and miss.
Yeah.
The athleticism you get, the power potential you get, the speed you get, the defense you get at 23, well, that's a whole different equation. He goes 23rd, and they also get Texas right-hander Morgan Cooper at 62.
It's interesting that Kendall is a guy we touched on after talking about Adele. I feel like there are a lot of similarities between these two. I'm off base there, but I feel like there's a lot of similar stuff going on. You got the tools like you mentioned, and obviously the big question with Kendall is the swing and miss. That's probably why I felt at number 23. But
Midwestern boys, both on the Chicago White Sox area code team in high school. With Kendall, you're probably going to have to do a swing reconstruction.
They didn't do much for them this spring, did they?
No, I mean, the thing is... Did they have to? That is the question. You look at the performance for the collegiate level, he got the job done. And batting average on balls in play was around 380, which is exceptional. He just has to put the ball in play more. He's got a tendency to pull even the outside pitch. He's very pull-oriented. Does not use his lower half well in his swing. And that's scary to me, how much power he could have.
If you just look at it,
he becomes a little more fluid and athletic with
the
swing.
You look at the power that actually translated this season. It was his best offensive year from a power perspective.
Yeah,
15 home runs compared to 9 and 8 the previous two seasons. So that translated to...
And he's a top-scale runner. He's going to play center field, and he's got arm strength. So there's... You know, all the tools are there for this guy to be really, really good. You reinvent the swing, maybe you get this. Maybe this guy does become a 260 hitter. If you get an average bat out of this guy,
watch out.
He's going to play center field and hit 30 bombs and steal a ton of bases and turn singles into doubles, doubles into triples. You know,
if he's a 40 hitter, he's a solid big leaguer, I would say.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's not going to have the impact if he's a 40 hitter. But he's a guy who you could map a path to getting regular ABs as a 40 hitter.
Now, the caveat to that is there's a reason he went 23rd, and there are a lot of people who didn't think he'd become a 40 hitter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people didn't think he has
work to do. He's not a put him in the big leagues right now and be a 40 hitter. There's going to have to be some development to get to that point.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I do imagine you're probably going to add a leg kick. You're going to add something to get his to improve his timing a little bit, give him a little more rhythm, maybe give him a toe tap, something like that. Kind of play with that a little bit. But there's a lot to play with.
Marlins, for the third time in 4 years, take a high school pitcher in the first round. They did it with Tyler Kolek, they did it with Braxton Garrett, and now they do it at pick 13 with lefty Trevor Rogers from New Mexico. Then center fielder, outfielder Brian Miller, pick 36, and then 51, Joe Dunan. They stay in North Carolina for two picks, North Carolina and NC State. But Rogers is the guy, I think, you know, that obviously jumps out here because a little old for the high school class, but the fastball command is advanced.
Yeah, I really like Rogers in this class. The first time I saw him was at the Perfect Game Classic in San Diego. He performed there, I think. An inning. Most of the pitchers threw just an inning there, but what I liked about him was the extension seemed really good, and I think the numbers kind of bear that out when you look at the TrackMan data. Rogers is a guy who can throw into the mid-90s, but he doesn't even always use that because he just doesn't need to. I talked to a scout who said he's got so much velo in the tank that he just doesn't even go to because he knows he doesn't use it. He's very low-key on the mound in that regard. Some teams knocked him for it, but clearly the Marlins in.
Yeah, I mean, It's a lively fastball. It's also kind of a lower three-quarter arm slot, but really fluid and easy. And great body, great athleticism. Slider's gonna, you know, breaking ball's gonna need work. The thing is, he is gonna be 20 years old in the fall. And so you do talk about a guy who needs a little more development. That's probably the negative side of him. But goodness, the positives are really, really appealing. The two North Carolina college picks, Dunand, I think, is justifiable there. We didn't have him as high.
He started a little slow.
Personally, I don't have a lot of convictions in his pure ability to hit. That has been echoed by some of my sources as well. I'm guessing they think he's going to hit enough to get to his power, which is elite raw power. This guy can hit him a long way. And then Brian Miller, you're getting a no-doubt center fielder.
Yep. He's got a great story, walk-on.
Yeah.
Turned himself from really a non-prospect into a second-round guy.
Yeah, and John Manuel and I will have probably going to put it on our bet board now, but we'll have a healthy debate on his ultimate power for the next several years, where that's going to be. He did show more power. He grew into more this year. I still have it as a 40. At best, John has a little more conviction in him, but if he does get to that power, heck of a pick at 36.
Takes us to the Brewers. I'm getting it up on my phone here because the Brewers have Keston Hiura, the pure bat hitting, pure bat, maybe the best college bat in this class, one up easily.
Yep.
But also
Tristan
Lutz. Did not play in the field this year, so there is that. Tristan Lutz, Caden Lemons. I really like the Brewers are obviously so far this year doing more than expected at the big league level. But really, when you look at this Brewers team, you see a team that's rebuilding still. And, it, it, you know, at the end, this, you look at this draft, and to me, it is something where you see where it fits very well in with what they're doing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens on Castanheira defensively, if they are going to try him throwing. I know he was getting close to being ready to throw when I talked to him.
Interesting that a National League team took him that high. I kind of thought an American League team would be a better fit for him with that, but they're confident in the arm.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, we always talk about, oh, I don't have a good arm, or, you know, I don't have this or that, but he can hit, they're going to find a spot for you, and he can hit, he's got power. I mean, he's got, like, mostly opposite field power.
Yeah.
He doesn't really turn on a lot of pitches. But with him, you know, how much arm do you really need to be a good big leaguer, given you how good his offensive tools are?
We have an analytics post at baseballamerica.com that says he's the best hitter in college.
Had the best season, I would say.
Best season in college, best performer.
Yeah. I mean,
when you normalize
he hit, like, 440, and, you know, you see Irvine, and he hit for a ton of power, too. So you're getting an exciting one him there. But if you don't want to talk about power, Tristan Letts has got to talk about it. That guy's got stupid power. He runs well. He's got a chance to play center, probably ends up in a corner. But a good value pick there. I mean, I assume that's probably going to be an overslot deal at 34. Maybe a little bit underslot on here. I'm not keen on that yet. And then Caden Lemons, whew, that guy might throw triple digits. You know, his slider improved this year. He's high ceiling guy. Caden Lemons is Gumby body comp. I mean, it's a really thin guy with a lot of room to fill. Maybe Gumby's a little wider.
Yeah, Gumby and just run over him.
Yeah, I mean the ragdoll body comp. Yeah, maybe that's a better one.
So again, we talked about the Reds. What a great draft, because picking two helps. If you pick one, it's even easier to have a really good draft. But Royce, the Twins, Royce Lewis, Brent Rooker, and Landon Leach, especially the Twins got Royce Lewis, who. Yes, I know that you could say that Royce Lewis was the third, the fourth, the fifth best player of this draft. But you could also make the argument he was the best player of this draft. He was in that discussion. Mm-hmm. But then Brent Rooker, they got the SEC's easily best player this year, who put on a monster show as well. So potentially two bats.
Two impactful ones, potentially, yeah. I mean, and then Landon Leach is no slouch either. He's another one who fits that category of guy people kept telling me to move up. I didn't move up enough. Has not been pitching very long, but has a great body. He's got a great arm stroke.
First Canadian off the board.
Yeah, that was expected, the way the Canadians played out this spring. But you're talking about a guy who's low 90s, projects to probably be mid-90s. Shows the ability to spin the ball. And, you know, great body. I mean, this guy looks like he's going to throw hard. And he's exceptionally raw, doesn't necessarily know how to pitch yet. Ceiling is high on him. And that's your third pick? I mean,
now let me ask you, Brent Rooker. I know that there are going to be some people who listen to this and say, how does Brent Rooker last as long as he did? Because they're going to look at the numbers and say, I mean, a guy who basically was going for the SEC Triple Crown, who was among the nation's leaders in a vast majority of the categories, offensive categories. And really what it comes down to, is it fair to say, defensively, he's not going to, there's questions about where he's going to play. He's probably not going to be a huge asset wherever he plays. And as great as the season is, there still is some question about, does that translate into him being a true impact big league hitter?
Yeah, that's all fair. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, we're looking at tools and tools and the likelihood of actualizing those tools, right? And what does this guy have? This guy has one of the better swings in the class. This guy's got a ton of power. He barrels fastballs like it's easy. 95? No, I don't care. Going to go opposite field tank here. I mean, he's shown the ability to recognize spin down the stretch. And that, to me, is the biggest development of his whole season. You know, I saw this guy in the Cape. I saw this guy, you know, as an underclassman. This is his MO, is that he chased breaking balls. You can really trust him strike zone judgment-wise, maybe a little bit stiff for some people, and limited defensive value. Now it's a beautiful swing. He's barreled fastballs. He did it in the best competition you could have for an amateur player. That's the best competition you're going to face. It's the SEC. There's a commercial. It's the SEC. It's a little different here. Whatever they're thinking.
It matters more.
It does matter more when you go in and you go rake like Brett Ricker does.
Well, it matters more because you're also having more fans in the stands for every game than you do anywhere else in college baseball.
Yeah, but I mean,
as I say this, I am the SEC representative.
It matters more.
Moving on.
Yeah,
Mets.
Let's move on.
Mets. The Mets love their pitching. They did it last year. They're doing it again this year in the draft. David Peterson, lefty from Oregon, 20th pick. And then they go Mark Vientos, likely third baseman long term, with the 59th pick. But Peterson at 20, it was crazy to think that the Mets could need pitching. But the Mets kind of need pitching right now with all the injuries and all. And Peterson could help that in the not immediate future, but in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I mean, he's... It's a big, strong lefty with good stuff. Not great stuff, but good stuff. And
solid stuff. He's more of a backing guy than an ace.
Yeah, I mean, he's close to it, though. And I think the other thing with him is you're probably hoping that his command and deception allow him to play up even more so. Does have a pretty good slider. Fastball is going to have average-type velocity, but he's going to be able to move it around the zone, going to go inside or out with it. He just knows how to pitch, and he's got a long track record of success and improvement.
Again, to plug the site, Mike Lanana has a really good story on how David Peterson has kind of progressed this year with Oregon, so check that out for sure. And then Vientos, he feels like a good value pick at 59.
Yeah, I mean, I actually 40. Thought he was going to be in play for them at 20. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, I had heard that rumor at some point today. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they're thrilled that they were able to get him at 59. You're talking about one of the youngest players in the entire class. I believe he's 17 and 6 months, something mm-hmm. like that. And Vientos, I think, is going to be a power bat. I think ultimately, you see him. It's a little bit like Will Benson last year. Not comparing him at all, but in terms of he'll get caught out front, right? And so he'll roll over that pitch. When he learns his timing a little bit better, and you can project on the guy who's 17 and a half to improve his timing, when he starts to really square up those balls, ball's going to go far because, man, does he hit some hard ground balls when he rolls over. And then when he's pitched away and he gets his arms fully extended and hits those screaming line drives to the opposite field, I mean, I talk about screaming line drives to the opposite field like it's my job. I love that trait in a young hitter. He has shown that. I mean, not going to play shortstop probably.
All right.
Power bat.
Yankees. We're rolling along. Before we fall asleep here, we're going to roll through. Yankees take Clark Schmidt with their first pick, 16th pick. TJ guy, and when we say TJ guy, currently recovering, he can share tips with James Caprellian probably before too long. You know, kind of hanging out, rehabbing in the rehab wing and at Tampa, but. High makeup guy, again, putting a plug in for the site. Mike Lanana wrote a really good story about Clark Schmidt. You know, go to baseballamerica.com. We also tweeted it tonight. You can find it there. And then, key thing with this, I think, you know, again, you have to think of these as portfolios, not just one pick. Mm-hmm. Matt Sauer at 54. They probably, with Schmidt at 16, considering the TJ and all, it's probably not a massive haircut, but they probably do save a little bit on slot there. And that helps them to go and get a guy at 54, who the reason Matt Sauer was there at 54 was because he's probably going to get more than what the slot is at 54.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
yeah, I know around that time we were waiting for his name to be called, who's going to take this guy. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I like them both. Yeah.
Jump to the Athletics. Austin Beck, number 6. Kevin Merrill, 33. And Greg Dykeman, number 43. Seems like kind of a toolsy draft for the Athletics.
Toolsy, it is. It's bringing in guys who there can be some impact there, mm-hmm. significant impact.
I mean, you look at last year; it was pitcher, 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 pitcher. Give me all of the pitchers. Mm-hmm. That's the early and often they went to, especially the college pitching market. Opposite this year, I mean, they take a high school bat. I don't believe Eric Kubota has taken a high school bat, the A's scouting director, since Addison Russell.
Worked out pretty well. They had to trade them, but it worked out
really
well.
That looks okay. I mean, you
hold on to him next time, but it worked out really well.
Yeah, maybe we'll hold on to this guy. This guy is cool shit. I mean, 70 bat speed, plus power, plus runner, chance to play center field,
and the thing
plus arm, nasty competitor is going to go get you. I mean, there's a lot of things to like about Austin Beck.
The thing about it is, and there it is, and he, there's a lot of things like about Austin Beck. Again, when you say about taking toolsy guys, he's not the fastest guy they drafted today.
No.
Because that's Kevin Merrill. He doesn't have the best power they drafted today because that's Greg Dykeman. I mean,
that's
because
crazy.
And again, that's not a knock on Austin Beck is easily the most well-rounded of all those guys. But what they did is after that, they get a guy who Kevin Merrill has, you know, an 8 on the card. You know, it's speed, is it not?
Yeah, sometimes we say, like, oh, this guy'd be a 90 runner. This guy'd be, like, a 100 runner. Like, if we were going 20 to 80 scale, this guy is, like, flies around the bases. He's got a quick lefty swing, left-handed swing. He performed really well this season. I figure where we had him ultimately. We had him in the top 50. I think he makes total sense there at 33 for them. And, like, goodness, that guy's got power. And it's moonshots. And the thing that'll be interesting will be see how that power is going to translate to wood when he's playing every day. Same thing with Austin Beck. I think Austin Beck's going to have plenty of wood bat power. The righty-lefty swings, Austin Beck being a right-handed hitter, Dykeman left-handed hitter. So there's that difference, but Dykeman hit for a ton of power in the SEC. Got the job done.
Phillies, we go with Adam Haseley, the Virginia center fielder. I believe that was Virginia went 7-8. If I remember right, Pavin Smith 7, Adam Haseley 8. And then the Phillies come back in the second round, Cal Poly right-hander Spencer Howard. Haseley is just, personally, if I got my choice between Pavin Smith and Adam Haseley, I'm taking Adam Haseley. That's just, you know, I want the guy who maybe he can stay in center. Maybe he can't, but maybe he can. Again, we're talking about a pretty polished bat, too.
But Mickey Moniak and Adam Haseley back-to-back in the first round for the Phillies.
Yeah, I think that's...
they like their hitters.
That's exactly it. I think it comes down to the pure hit tool. There's immense track record. We talk about it with Pavin Smith, but there's also plenty of track record for Adam Haseley. I mean, he was here at the National High School Invitational in Cary in 2014, mm-hmm. I believe that was, with the First Academy, or forget which high school he's at.
Same as Logan.
Foster Griffin is...
First academy.
Point is, plenty of track record. Grew into some power this year. Really hit for power this year. So, fantastic pick. I think it ain't totally justifiable. Makes sense. Spencer Howard. I'm still upset with myself on how low we had Spencer Howard. Guy's big, physical, does it easy. It makes sense. He fits that high. We didn't have him super high. I think maybe would have been. I don't think we would have moved him up that high.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think we would.
But because he still has some uncertainty here, but he pitched well down the stretch and easy delivery.
Moving on to the Pirates portfolio again: Shane Baz, Stephen Jennings, Calvin Mitchell, Connor Usselton. When you talk about the whole portfolio there, Calvin Mitchell, there's some risk there. You know, did not have a good spring, but had a bad start to the spring, especially.
Yeah.
But again, to take him at 50, especially to take him at 50 when you then add Connor Russell to the 72 as well, and you already have two premium, high-impact high school arms ahead of them. Again, it helps to pick four times today. But
yeah, about four prep guys for the Pirates. It's...
Yeah, I mean, you get two high-ceiling pitchers and two high-ceiling hitters. Calvin Mitchell, if you would have asked me coming into the spring if he's available at 50, I would have said no shot. Mm-hmm. That guy probably goes in the teens or the 20s, as bad as that good. Gets off to a slow start this spring. But ultimately, at the end, the average is there, the power is there, the on-base percentage is there. You know, he checks all the boxes really as a hitter. Defensively, there are questions. Is he good enough to play left field? I mean, he's very slow-footed. He's a minus-minus runner.
We've been talking about plus-plus, minus-minus.
But that's the thing that tells you how good his bat is,
yeah.
Right? Well, when I tell you how this guy's not a runner, he's not a defender, he doesn't have a good arm, it's below average arm, that should tell you how good he is as a hitter. Because if he's got those on the card, and he goes 50th overall, I mean, he's a left-handed hitter, really, really loose, fluid swing. You know, power is in there when he wants to get to it, when he tries to get to it, still learning how to use that power, but... potent potential bat, middle of the lineup type bat.
San Diego, I would say that this was a more conventional draft than I expected. Last
which
year,
is unconventional for them.
Which is unconventional, because last year, you know, the Padres, it was very much about, hey, we're going to take this guy, Quantrill, at the top, and then we're going to save some money on the next pick, but we're going to spend it on the next four after that, and all that. It was very, you know, it was very creative, as a way to put it. This is Mackenzie Gore at three, who very much was a consensus guy at that spot. Mm-hmm. Luis Camposano, Bracero, I believe the first catcher off the board.
Yep. Yes.
Just ahead of MJ Melendez. And then they say, yeah, we haven't gotten enough catchers yet. Blake Hunt, which they've done this before, because if you remember right, the year they took Austin Hedges, they didn't sign him. But it was Austin Hedges. They took Austin Hedges, sorry, next year then they took Brett Austin, I believe.
Hmm.
So they've kind of doubled up on this before, but again, that's more kind of guys in the spots where you kind of expect them than, hey, we're going to save some money here, and then we're going to push a guy down. And
yeah, I didn't know they had two catchers until we're just looking at it now. There's so many drafts that's going on. But we talked about the catcher class being weak in this class, and then the Padres go and grab two of them.
It's almost like in fantasy football when you start to just like take all the kickers at the end so you can trade them because your friends are going to be like going to try to get the kickers from you because they need a kicker. But like the...
Doesn't work that way in baseball.
It doesn't work that way in baseball. I mean, you can't trade guys until, you know, after 6 months after the draft or at the end of the World Series.
Oh, no, we need
the
catcher for our rookie-level club.
So,
we're screwed.
Yeah, I think it's kind of odd to do both of those guys. I mean, you take best player available.
Yep.
I mean, that's what their draft was, and that's what they said their draft would be publicly. And
but the thing that
they
is,
did it every time, I think. I think they thought those guys were the best player. When
but it is interesting with that is one thing that does create, not short-term, but long-term is, if you have two guys that didn't take a college guy catcher and a high school catcher, you take two, and if they're both ready for low A at the same time, you either have to, you know, you do the share where they rotate, they DH and all, or eventually one of them has to kind of speed up a little bit. Because you really, again, nowadays high school catchers don't catch 120 games in the minors and things like that. But you do want to get a guy eventually up to where he's catching those 70 to 90 games. And one of those guys is going to have to speed up, or one of them is going to have to slow down for that to happen. Because you can't do that for two guys.
Yeah, I think we'll probably be talking about that for several years, mm-hmm. Those two being at the same level with each other. And they're both, Hunt's a pretty good defender. Like, to me, just pure receiving-wise, I think he's some of the better hands. He's got a plus arm. Has pull power, run into it kind of power. Less track record than Camposano. Mm-hmm. Camposano got a lot better in the spring, really trimmed up his body. Second cousin of Pedro Martinez. There's, you know, used to go down to the Dominican and catch those guys. So he's got pretty good natural hands. Struggles with some pitches in certain locations. But his lateral mobility was a lot better this spring with his weight loss and just being in better shape. So high ceiling there. It'd be odd to see how they handle it.
Yeah. Giants are an interesting draft.
Giants, we're rolling around, and we're nearing the end here. I think five to go after this. Helio Ramos, Jacob Gonzalez. I know that you're a Ramos fan.
Oh, goodness. I love this guy. Love this guy. I mean,
star of Under Armour last summer.
Yeah, I mean, he might be Yasiel Puig with good makeup. Can you imagine what that's like? I mean, and I say that because he's kind of like, he's not tall, but he's like, he's not really short, but he's like 6 foot.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness, he's built like a brick house, man. And he's tooled up. He's got really fluid wrists plus bat speed. He's got a tendency to expand the zone a little bit just because he trusts his hands so much. When he connects, goodness, that ball jumps off his bat. He's a plus or better runner. He's got a chance to play center field. He's got a big arm. He's got all the tools. Makes sense at 19.
Seattle, they have two picks, 17 and 55. I'm going to say it right now. Again, I'm not saying they had the best draft tonight, because I'll take the guys who pick one and two. Mm-hmm. But
you love you some Evan White.
I love me some Evan White. I love me some Sam Carlson. For a team that essentially had, like, I mean, you pick 17 and 55, the draft is not coming to you. But the draft came to them because Evan White is 17. Now, the thing I don't know is you get Sam Carlson at 55, I'm assuming at that point where you're going to have Florida signee, you're going to have to do some things later on, because I don't think you're going to get a big haircut from Evan White that's paying for that. You're going to probably have to do it later on. You're probably going to see that their draft tomorrow creates some room to pay Sam Carlson what you're going to have to pay Sam Carlson. That said, Evan White, Sam Carlson, love that draft.
Goodness, you could justify Sam Carlson 17.
Oh, like, you wouldn't have been
so
reach.
And you could justify Evan White even higher than 17, too.
I think that's about as low as we figured he could go.
Yeah, I mean...
Lately.
Yeah, the lately, I mean, we moved him up towards the end. He finished number 12 on the BA 500. Goodness. I don't know if I have anything to add. The guy can hit.
Okay, they did it well. The Rays, they go number 4 and take Brendan McKay at 31. Drew
1B slash LHP.
Yep, there you go. Drew Rasmussen. Is that how we're pronouncing his last name? Number 40, Michael Mercado.
Hey, Carlos, do we have a story about Michael Mercado at Baseball America?
Definitely check that out. Mercado was one of the, I guess, late risers in this class. He's an uber projectable guy. He's 6'5". His pitching coach told me he might be closer to 6'6". He's still growing. Super thin in the low 90s with his fastball right now. Touches 94, 95. He throws 4 pitches really well. Knows how to use the two-seam fastball and get himself out of games a little quicker when his other stuff isn't working. Really smart guy. We also have the video to his pregame routine, which is very elaborate. Pitching coach Pat Edmonds over there, he kind of took some stuff from Driveline, took some stuff from Arizona State, really advanced pitching program that they're on over there, and it's paid off for Michael Mercado.
Oh, gosh, I love that pick.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's your third guy.
I was going to say, now guys.
I mean, we know what the Rays do with pitchers. We know consistently, time and time again, they take guys in the second, fourth, eighth round. And they get big leaguers. They show them how to throw a changeup. They develop their bodies. Goodness, you get Michael Mercado in this pitching system? Are you kidding me? And that's your third pick? And you got Brandon McKay?
You like this?
He
likes this.
He's a fan.
Goodness, their system's trended in the right direction over the past few years. Just got a whole lot better today. And Drew Rasmussen, you know, if Drew Rasmussen wasn't hurt coming into the spring, he probably doesn't get to 31. The way he pitched, mid-90s, good off speed. Come on, man. But this is crazy.
Like
this class a lot.
Now, this was so much a Rangers draft. Mm-hmm. This couldn't have been more of a Rangers draft. You want your upside? I mean, the Braves always talk about we're upside. The Rangers are picking 26, 29, and 66. And they say, no, you take Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright is a college guy who's had track record and all. We're going to go Bubba Thompson, Chris Cease, Hans Kraus. We are going to put all the chips, and we're not betting it on red or black. We're going to put it on green. You know, we're going to go, you know, but the payoff, if it pays off, is going to be massive. Doesn't always work for them. You know, there are drafts that the Rangers have done this where you look back on it and go, ooh, that did not work. But they also have drafts where it has paid off, and they've gotten the Joey Gallos of the world, and they've gotten the Lewis Brinsons of the world, and all that. And you look at that, it just, again, Bubba Thompson, the arrow is pointing up, you know, really, really strong spring, extreme athlete. Hans Kraus, again, when you talk about just upside arms. That's an upside arm. That is a high upside arm. This is a risk reward draft. So
I love it. I'm all in on this one too. I mean, like, I don't know where to start. Bob Thompson was in the discussion this morning for going in the top 10, and you know that would have been an underpay, but I don't think it would have been unjustifiable.
Mm-hmm. And you give him a 26, you're getting
tool shed power, speed. People impressed with the hit tool right now this spring, more so than they were last summer. Sign me up. Chris Cease, guy's going to play shortstop. We know that. I mean, we don't know how much we're going to ultimately get hit tool-wise. On the low end, I've had guys say he's Giovanni Meyer.
Gio Meyer.
Yeah.
Which, you're not comfortable on here now because Gio was not a big leader.
As a defender. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he does have plus bat speed. He shows some power. Again, makes sense. Very few shortstops in this class, especially at that point in the draft. And then, oh, by the way, Hans Kraus. If Hans Kraus makes it as a starter, if he gets a little bit stronger, if he does make it as a starter, wow. I mean, you've got you're going to have an 80 fastball that's going to go for seven innings. I mean, this guy does touch 96, 97 in the late innings. Mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily your concern. Your concern is the delivery. It's a high back elbow inversion kind of deal. You're also going to have some growing up. There's going to be some growing pains for Hans Gross. But I think with what he's been through as a young man, he's been through quite a bit with his family situation. And he's a fiery, fiery competitor. So if I tell you, hey, you're going to get a really, really good closer at 66 in the draft,
you'd be thrilled.
You're thrilled with that. And if, oh, he's got a chance to start, even better.
Yep. Two more teams.
Blue Jays. Logan Warmoth, Nate Pearson, Hagen Danner. Three picks here. They go 22, 28, 61. Warmoth, the first college shortstop off the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
First college shortstop off the board.
I believe the only one today.
Pearson
the second JUCO
pitcher off the board.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then Danner as a catcher.
And also Pearson, the hardest thrower off the board today, correct? Second hardest, Hunter Green.
Hunter Green, yeah.
But after that, documented by, well, many, many sources that he was on
Definitely it was 101. I did have a couple teams say they had 102 at his bullpen a couple weeks ago. Another draft that I really like.
How about Danner as a catcher?
I like that one. The guy's got now power. He's got good swing. He's a competitor. He's caught. This was the guy who caught the area code team, SoCal area code team, which had Hunter Green, who was throwing a 97-mile-an-hour fastball that was dancing through the zone. Matt Sauer, who had good low 90s fastball then, good breaking ball. Daniel Richardson, Nick Prado. He's got all these arms, and you don't notice him.
Mm-hmm.
You don't notice him until you go see him specifically to watch him catch. That's when you notice him. But he doesn't make a lot of mistakes back there. He's a really, really polished player. Powers is, he's not the quick twitch explosive
mm-hmm.
guy. Does it easy. Power's real right now, and he gets to it consistently. And then Warmoth, I think you guys can play shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hit. Debates on whether it's going to be an average bat or a little bit better than that, but he's got some power too. Nate Pearson, this sky's the limit. I mean, if he went to LSU next year,
he could have been a top 10, top 5 pick.
He could have been 1-1. It's 6'6", physical, slider and changeup, both improving throughout the year. He also throws a curveball. I think that's probably going to get scrapped ultimately. You're going to be a 3-pitch guy instead of a 4-pitch guy. But 6'6", athletic, loose. Gorgeous armage. Love this guy's armage. Turns it over really well. Yeah.
We're down to the last one, which is good because...
And then we're going to preview tomorrow.
No!
We're not.
No, we're not. I'm going to... Josh Norris for that. Josh Norris over there.
No!
But, so we have the National Seth Romero at 25, which I think we've linked them to Seth Romero for, I don't know...
Forever.
Like, since the day after he was basically kicked off the team in Houston. Will Crow at 65. Again, Seth Romero at 25. Yes, he was kicked off the team. At the same time, you are getting at 25 a player who, if he had not been kicked off the team, you would not be getting at 25.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be
really
fascinating to see how he starts off his minor league career.
Now, again, if it was not for the fact that he had been kicked off his team, and you do wonder, like, okay... You don't want to. There is some concern. You want to give a guy like that, who's had kind of that background, taste of success too quickly, like, or how does he handle failure? Because if not for that, you could conceivably, with a Nationals bullpen that basically seems to on a regular basis carry a can of gasoline, pour it on the mound, and light it. As the night goes on, you could see, like, if you were dialing up the guy who could be, hey, you know. Hello, Mr. Power Reliever. He has some of those traits.
Yeah.
But, again, you come back to, usually the guys you move like that are the guys who are the premium makeup guys. And nothing except, but I think even almost by his own admission, there's some growing up there to do. That's often not the guy that you are as aggressive moving that quickly. But the Nationals need relievers.
Yeah, I mean... It's really going to come down to how he comes out of the gate, right? Like, I think, while his strikeout and walk numbers are really, really good, his pure out ability wasn't, elite. His pitch ability. I guess his results weren't so good that you're like, oh, well, yeah, he's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's like a mid-threes ERA for his career there. So it's nothing crazy. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but and he's doing an okay conference, a good conference,
right.
An underrated conference, probably a conference that should be talked about as a Power Five. But you know, so you'll see how it translates. And he's kept in shape. Apparently, he's been throwing bullpens ever since he's been kicked off the team. His last appearance with Houston was electric. It was,
mm-hmm.
it was mid to upper 90s because it was a short burst. He was ruled eligible. He pitched like the same day or the next day. He was back pretty quick, and it was all still there. So you can kind of dream on him. I think the situation is you kind of see what you get as a reliever. If he's going short stints, what do you have? See if you can get something where he does have major league value this year.
And
if not, fine. You're ultimately going to try to develop.
Right. From that standpoint, there's little harm to it because he has the innings to do it this year because he hasn't pitched as much. And again, you speed him up this year to put the brakes back on next year and say, okay, that was great. Thank you for helping us, and now you're going to
start.
So mm-hmm. that's what you might see. Again, he has to sign and everything too, but. We've covered 30 teams. Yay!
It's only 1:10.
It's only 1:10 in the morning Eastern. Yay! So we will be back here, same time. We're going to 7 a.m. Facebook, Facebook Live tomorrow.
Too. Oh, you said 6:30.
Yeah, okay. No. But we do thank you for listening. We do thank you for watching if you've watched us or listened. And we thank you to Baseballism for sponsoring us because Baseballism sponsors our Facebook Lives and our podcasts. And we want to remind you, as always, visit baseballism.com, and if you enter the code BA2017, you will get free shipping on your order. If you get a shirt, if you get a hat, they've got all kind of cool stuff. You get a backpack, a leather backpack.
I got a nice hoodie.
You got a hoodie?
Yeah.
You know, so, but we thank you to Baseballism for that. We thank you to Josh Norris for being our engineer over there who has been...
I would like to make a comment to the people who are watching right now. Aaron Judge just hit home run number 22.
Aaron Judge just hit home run 22.
How many feet?
It probably 450 oppo.
What's the
450
exit
oppo. Okay, so we'll get there.
It just happened.
We'll talk.
But we thank you for that. We will be continuing, obviously, at baseballamerica.com. We thank you. Traffic today was awesome. It was incredible. Keep it up. Keep coming back. If you haven't subscribed, baseballamerica.com/subscribe gives you a chance to get... We've got 750 scouting reports in the queue, ready to go. When your team drafts a guy, our plan is you'll right away be able to see a very good, solid scouting report on what that guy is. And we don't plan on doing that for rounds 1 and 2, which we've done tonight. We're talking about 3 through 10 through 15, and we're going to have guys, a lot of scouting reports for guys in the 20s and the 30s.
Also going to have our 2018 watch list, which is, I think we're probably going to do the top of the list. It will be free, and then the whole list will be subscriber only. But that's going to be out this week, so no rush for the
week. It does not stop. A lot of great stuff. For Hudson Belinsky, Carlos Galazzo, I'm JJ Cooper. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We will be back tomorrow.